were looking back 30 years, what do you remember from those earliest years?
Well, it was so unknown. You know, when we saw the first news accounts, any of us that were involved in the community looked at it and thought, well, this is bad news. And the question was, how bad a news? Health issues were already on the radar of, you know, queer activists in that time, or gay activists, as we would have called ourselves in that time. But no one could conceive that it would be the worst natural disaster of modern times? I mean, there's been 60 million infections. 30 million people have died. It was far beyond our ability to conceive in June of 1981.
And, you know, there were those early reports, of course. And what was, you know, what mobilized you to do what you did?
Well, first it was more theoretical because, you know, we knew that there was a disease present and some people were getting it. So for the first couple of months, it was sort of just following it. But very rapidly, by the end of the year, certainly, everyone knew people who were sick or were dying. And that began very quickly. And so I, of course, you know, knew people who were sick and dying and began to organize. In fact, a small little club that I was part of, which is now forgotten, called the Stonewall Gay Democratic Club, actually hosted a forum with Bobby Campbell, who came and showed us his Kaposi Sarkozyn lesions in February of 1982. So by that point, people are understanding. Bobby's realized that he should go around and become the spokesperson, the AIDS poster boy, which is what he began. And community groups realized we should pay attention to this, we should do things about this.
And of course, at that time, they didn't know it was a virus. They really didn't know what it was. There were a lot of theories. And so when you have theories and conspiracy theories, you have a lot of fear, right? There was, I don't want to say panic, but there was a lot of concern.
Oh, there was great fear. And I think every gay man of that time assumed that they were infected. I think everyone thought, I'm infected. And so it's true for a while. We didn't know it was an infectious agent. We didn't know what the agent was. But people certainly understood that their friends who lived lives just like them, who were their age and lived with them in the Castro or wherever they lived, were getting sick and dying very, very quickly. So it was a terrifying thing. You could know someone and they could be very healthy and within a very rapid order become very, very sick and die.
And, you know, if you track the emotions that the community went through, there was, of course, I mean, I suppose denial's in there somewhere, but there's the fear. And then in the late 80s, there was anger, you know, an ACT UP. And people were tired of having a president that wouldn't talk about it and everything else. What would you say, what transformed the epidemic from those early years to one of more activism?
Well, that it just wasn't just. I mean, I think first you did get the fear, and then, of course, as soon as people knew people who were sick, we were trying to take care of them. So there was an issue of, you know, making sure they ate, making sure they got medical care, making sure that people didn't have insurance got care, and all of that went on for a while. But then at a certain point, you realize that these people weren't being treated right. I mean, that your friends, that your partners couldn't get the care they needed, that there were civil rights attacks, enormous, you know, fire them from their jobs, lock them up in camps. Horrible, horrible things were proposed. And so anger came from the GLBT community in response to the inadequacy of care and reaction, and also the attacks that were being put on us by the people who always hated us. Same people hated us before AIDS, same people hate us after AIDS. But when AIDS hit, they were particularly vicious in attacking the GLBT community.
You know, there are some people who feel that the epidemic, really horrible as it is and was, empowered the community and created a kind of acceptance and visibility that wasn't there before. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, certainly people who were sick and people who had HIV/AIDS were, in effect, forced out of the closet. So you get to use a famous person, say Roy Cohn, who was rumored to be gay, but no one knew he was gay. You know, died of AIDS, Liberace, Rock Hudson. So a series of very prominent people were suddenly known to be gay. And on another scale, just people came out to their family, and you know, sometimes because they thought they might be infected, sometimes they were infected, and they introduced them to their partners or their caregivers. The family now meets the co-workers meet the caregivers, and so on. So you get this enormous sort of emergence of people to take care of the sick. Also remember, Now we need an infrastructure. If you're protesting against civil rights, you don't need to build, you know, programs to take care of people. You don't need hospitals and research facilities and all that. So suddenly the community went, in the 70s, when I did lobbying and advocacy, it was all around civil rights legislation. It was never around almost never around appropriations. Just none of that occurred. Suddenly, we're meeting with re-scientists and talking, well, we want to figure out what you're saying so we can go tell appropriators to give you money. Entirely different discussion. The gay community in the early 80s were talking couple dozen people employed in the entire nation. There was no infrastructure as we know it. And part of what occurred there was that in creating the infrastructure to respond around AIDS, we sort of learned how do you build buildings, how do you hire people, how do you create structures.
And how do you get drugs approved.
And how do you get drugs approved. And many, many other positive things came out of that. But yeah, the community was transformed and is certainly stronger and more vibrant than it was 30 years ago. I think part of it is because of AIDS, but most of it is because of our response to AIDS. We responded to AIDS in becoming the community we always hoped we would be. We did not, you know, disintegrate. We didn't fall apart. We didn't, you know, get into a debate of are these people really my community? Are they really my family? Everyone said, well, of course it's my family. Of course it's my community. And here's what we're going to do. And one of the best examples of that is Elizabeth Taylor. You know, she just died recently. But Elizabeth Taylor is a great example of saying, well, of course gay people are my friends. I don't care if they have AIDS. And of course we're going to raise money for them. And that's what real people do. And so she set an example. And, you know, she's just one example of a zillion straight allies to step forward and said, this is how America should respond.
So 30 years later, young people. You think, I remember we were young then, but I remember how I felt about it, and there was, you know, huge concern and all that. But nowadays, do you think people look at it, how much of part of their consciousness is it, do you think?
I think they're safer than, I hope they're safer, but my general sense is that they're better educated, they're aware. I think young people tend to have a sense of invincibility, as in all generations at all times, but... they know there was a plague. They know there was a pandemic, and they know that it's still around, and they're at risk for it, and that they should be careful. And when I was a young man, I thought most venereal diseases would be cured in a week or two. And although I was trying to be careful, I wasn't overwhelmingly frightened about it. And I think they've been educated. I think the educational campaigns that have occurred around the world, certainly in the United States, have had a positive effect. I certainly hope so.
You know, just thinking about younger people today, I mean, all of the organizing that you and others did back then, of course, there was no internet. I mean, it would have been so much easier today if we had to do it again, right? I mean, the old-fashioned way. I mean, what did you have to do to get a meeting?
Well, yeah, well, it's all old technology. It's they create the flyer, and you create the flyer something with hand press typed, and you make long-distance phone calls, which they charge you more than $30 a month for, and you send faxes and so on. And no, it was organizing of a different era, and it was, you know, organizing an era that's gone forever now. I mean, the internet is, and the world has completely changed. But, we organized an International AIDS Candlelight Memorial that began here with people with AIDS in 1983 and went international in 1985. So I was involved in a group called Mobilization Against AIDS that was organizing globally, which you think without an internet is really quite remarkable. We'd mail off tubes of posters to people, and 2 or 3 months later they'd send back photographs of things that had occurred in that area. It was really quite remarkable. One of the things that's amazing how long ago it's been. When we did the AIDS Candlelight Memorials, the Soviet Union still existed, right? So we were sending things actually to Poland and to what would be considered the Soviet bloc in the early 80s. And, you know, here it is all this time later, a long time ago. 1981 is a long time ago.
So what, as we look back, what's important to remember, to take away? What's the takeaway you think that you hope people will think about as they ponder this 30th anniversary?
Well, golly, Scott, I would certainly hope that Americans anyway, and particularly GLBT Americans, are proud of the community's response to HIV/AIDS. And I hope San Franciscans are proud of how they took care of each other and, stood against bigotry and stood for care and compassion. I think there's a lesson of how to respond to a great disaster. You know, there'll be other great disasters that will occur to humankind, and this isn't the last one. Here's something of a model about how a people who were legally discriminated against and despised took care of themselves, took care of each other, and were supported in some places, San Francisco being first among those.